And my guest I'd like to welcome now from Chicago, who is the president of Potter & Potter Auctions, Gabe Fiore. Hey there, Gabe. How are you?
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Doing great, thank you. I appreciate you being on this apocalyptic type of podcast we're having, the End of the World podcast. I thought I would try to get something out before the yours may be the last voice anyone hears, you see.
Well, I pity them all.
So I wanted to talk with you about the auction house. And I think you had told me before that actually the name Potter, where had it come from? Would you kind of tell that story briefly?
Oh, it's just a translation of our last name. Fahuri translates to Potter, so that's where the name comes from.
And since it's you and your father, it's Potter and Potter.
That's it.
Okay. Now, what I want to, again, talk specifically, I guess, about is how it relates to magic. And I assume that you auction off other things aside from magic paraphernalia?
We sure do. But, you know, it's, I don't know, it sounds distinguished enough to sort of take us out of the realm of strictly magic stuff. So that's why we chose the name.
I see. Now, and I wanted to have your opinion also on whether you think the cost of some of these things have gone up. And I'm saying things like, let's say, posters. I remember when Mike Cabney had the big auction several years ago, and that's kind of what set the price for magic posters at that time. And they were going for thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. And then my question, with the economy being as it is, if you have noticed a change of whether it's going up or down or remaining the same?
Well, I'd say the high prices were sort of things were on an upward trend before Mike and George had that auction and sale in 2000, and I think stayed at that level for a few years after. Because of the economy, I would say the things that have suffered would be the mid and low end material. Things where people in the middle class don't have the disposable income that they maybe once did.
Mm-hmm.
But the antiques dealer credo, or antique dealer credo, I suppose, is good stuff is always good. So if you have something that's rare, desirable, high quality, it's probably always going to be rare, desirable, and of high quality, and therefore valuable.
Yeah.
And sought after by people with money. So in the last 2 years, we've sold posters for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 because of their, you know, because they possess all of those qualities.
Yeah, desirability and everything.
Yeah.
What is it that you would say nowadays that people are trying to dispose of as far as two different questions, I guess. What is it that people are trying to sell, and what is it that's most desired that people are wanting to find or buy?
The things that tend to do well in our auctions are things with a great story behind them or a link to somebody who has a great reputation. In other words, Al Flosso's coin pail we sold last year, or I guess this year, for about $13,000. We've had some other things with a strong historical provenance that have done exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
And also things where there are very, very few of them. We sold a very expensive catalog, believe it or not, a catalog from a magic shop or magic dealer in England from 1845. We sold for $32,000.
Holy cow.
2012. Yeah, just unbelievable.
Wow.
What do people want to sell? I think everybody'd like to find one of those catalogs in their basement. But I don't know. I would say that is kind of unchanged. You know, people are selling what they've always sold in this market anyway, books, posters, apparatus, ephemera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that hasn't changed very much.
Are more things coming out of the closet? Again, with the economy being what it is, I wonder if people are trying to think, well, what can I do to increase some revenue? Perhaps if I dispose of some of this stuff that I've got, maybe I can. So are you seeing more things coming to you than you did before?
Well, I'm seeing more things coming to us because I think we've had some real great auctions.
Auctions, yeah.
So, you know, people seem to like what we offer and how we do it and seem to like the things that we're selling. I would say if it, you know, are people trying to raise money by selling what they own for other purposes? Yeah, I occasionally have people call up and say, I'd like to consign this because I need to make a college tuition payment for my son or something like that. But I would say that's 25% of the time or less. Most of the people that are consigning things to us are doing it for other reasons. and generally are not in desperate need of the money.
Mm-hmm.
They're making other plans, or they have a spouse who is deceased, or they're looking to trade up for something better, and, you know, they'd like to use the money to buy another collectible item.
Sure. You know, I had a conversation with Richard Kaufman about print media being dead, specifically magazines, not necessarily books. We were talking about the evolution of printing, that is, in books that went to desktop publishing. So then, you know, for a long time, there were just a few books each year that came out, and then with desktop publishing, everybody put it out, and then before long, they started putting out, you know, things electronically, and then it got so that people are just not writing anymore, but they would rather just put on a videotape of something, you know, and suddenly become a YouTube star type of a thing. So my question is on this, of whether that you're seeing more magazines and books that are coming your way, or...
We're certainly seeing a lot of books and magazines. I guess we are, but we're also seeing a lot of props and posters, so I don't know if I'm the best judge of that. I will say that in my other life, I do publish books on an annual basis under another business, Squash Publishing. And
right.
This year we released Bruce Bernstein's anthology of all of his work called Unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And in about 3 months we sold 1,000 copies. So,
wow.
You know, in the real world that's not very good, but in the magic world that's
good.
Great.
That is-
so I'm very happy with the way that turned out. But as far as what people are selling, yeah, there are a lot of books out there, but remember, just as you said, at one time, everybody was publishing a book. So there are maybe a disproportionate amount of books out there anyway.
And available, right.
Yeah.
Well, we just had our auction here, just our annual magic auction for the club, and that's when I decided, well, my wife has been saying for the longest time, why don't you dispose of your older magazines and things? And I thought, well, I guess it's finally time, because most of those, again, have been digitized, so I can go back and look at the Genie Archives or at Magic Archives. So why do I need the hard copies of those when it's so much easier to go online or do a search and find whatever you want? There is that tactile thing, though. You know, I do like to hold something, as most of us do. But is there any value to magazines, to the hard copy of magazines anymore?
There are some of them which have retained value.
Hmm.
But, you know, the key for us anyway is it has to be a complete set. So if you have 5 issues of Genie, we're not interested. But if you have a complete set of Genie from 1936 on, then we are.
Right.
Loose magazines and things like that are very hard to sell. It's the kind of thing where we don't even take them, really.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a complete bound file of the Sphinx, for example, we sold one this year for $6,000 or $7,000.
Hmm.
And other files that are complete have done fairly well, but they used to be a sort of an unattainable resource, you know, and there was a lot of value in them, whereas now, you're right, most of them have been digitized and are available in one form or another.
So if somebody's wanting to talk with you or consign something to you, how do they go about having Potter & Potter sell something for you?
Give me a call, send us an email, let us know what you have, and we'll start the conversation that way. You know, we don't want to take on more than we can handle or that will take a long time to sell. You know, we do have the next year's worth of auctions already mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to take on material that we already have in-house. And then you'll just be mad at me for not selling it soon enough for you.
Do you like to have those physically in-house rather than, let's say, I'm holding my book collection and then you're trying to sell them and then I've got to ship them out? I guess you really need to have the physical.
Yeah, we need the objects here because we, you know, we produce a printed catalog and we, you know, photograph everything professionally, and, you know, that's the service we provide. We need to be able to know what the condition is of the items.
Sure.
So they do, you know, with the exception of maybe some sort of illusion or something where it wouldn't be practical, we need to have the material on hand.
And how long does the auction actually go? I mean, I know like Martinka's has auctions online, and they tend to run for, I don't know, a month or so, and you can place online bids and everything. So how do people go about bidding? Is this a live auction?
Real-time? I think his last a week, whereas ours is a live auction. So while the catalog may be posted online for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you can sort of preview the material, it's a live sale. So on the scheduled day, we have people in a room in our gallery here in Chicago, and you know, hardwood floors and track lights, and in about 4 hours we saw about 350 lots.
Wow. And so people can bid online.
Absolutely. They can bid in advance. They can just leave a bid on the computer, or you can sit there in your pajamas with a cup of coffee and bid live with the people in the room as the auction takes place. You follow it live online the day of the auction.
Now, in that particular case, it's not like that you have a camera on the room. It's actually something that's showing what the bids are. How does that?
Yeah, there's a little Java console that pops up. We could put a camera in the room, but I generally don't shave on auction day, so we figure spare everybody the indignity.
And how many auctions you say you got next year pretty much lined up? What goodies have you got coming up next year?
We have a great auction in February, which doesn't have a name attached to it necessarily, other than it's got some unbelievable books and posters, prints, some early fair apparatus, and things like that. The one we're very excited about follows the February auction in April. On April 6th, we'll be selling the personal property of Cardini, which is just sensational. It includes the tuxedo and the bellhop costume and his billiard balls, the monocle, his scrapbooks, correspondence, books inscribed to him by Di Vernon. I'm not even scratching the surface by telling you these things. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible stuff.
You know, just yesterday, I was just talking with Sean Farquhar about cruise ships and things. We mentioned Cardini and was saying that apparently, in addition to his manipulation act, he had a parakeet act that he performed.
Correct. We have the houlette that he used with the parakeet.
Wow.
And
okay.
We have the costumes he wore on the cruise ships.
Yeah.
They did a complete Chinese act on the cruise ships after, I think, when they were in their 60s.
Do you have any video or anything of that?
We have the home movies that Cardini shot.
Oh, my gosh.
We have his gloves. We have his top hat. I mean, it's really, really and truly amazing stuff. Yeah.
And that's going to be April what?
April 6th.
Awesome.
April 6th. Following that, we have an auction of gambling memorabilia, including coin-operated items and playing cards and cheating devices and books on gambling. Then we have the collection of Bill King coming up later in the year. He was a noted collector of apparatus. He had thousands and thousands of props, really incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
And then a really fantastic book collection to round out the year that will include books dating back to the 16th century on magic.
Wow. Well, to kind of conclude this, how would people get in touch with you? What's the website and your phone number or however, email?
Our website is potterauctions.com, and our phone number is 773-472-1442. And get in touch, and we look forward to hearing from you if you're interested in buying or selling.
Or just, you know, coming and being a part of the auction to sit and see some of this incredible stuff, memorabilia that you get to see live and touch.
Yeah, it's all on display. We have, you know, a nice gallery with showcases and track lights and hardwood floors, and everything is on display for a week prior to every auction we conduct.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome people to come in and see it live and in person. You know, you can't really beat that.
Sounds great. Well, listen, thank you very much, Gabe. I appreciate all the information you've given us. I wish you and your father and family a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
Same to you, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show. And, Happy New Year and Happy Holidays.
Thank you.
It's cold outside. But, baby, it's cold outside. Been hoping that you drop
it. I'd like to welcome as my guest now, direct from Las Vegas, the editor and publisher of Magic Magazine, Stan Allen. Hey there, Stan. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. And I thank you very much for being on this particular unusual podcast. I wanted to try to give the listener something a little bit different. You know, I had an idea I was thinking about way back when Andy Williams had these great, Christmas specials every year, and you have people kind of come in, they'd sing songs and everything. I thought it'd be kind of fun to have somebody come over, a few guys, you know, locally, and just kind of do kind of like my TV talk show type of a thing. But then I thought, well, why do video? And I could do some audio, and this way I can record people from all over the world, basically, about their various interests. So, so as it's been growing, this is going to be just an epic episode with a lot of variety.
So you want a little trivia about the Andy Williams specials?
Yeah.
One year his guest was Channing Pollock.
Did not know that.
And after Channing had done his act, they cut back to Andy sitting by the Christmas tree with all of those kids around him and a kid on his lap. And
yeah.
I believe, and I'm paraphrasing now, but I believe he says, that is amazing how he gets those birds out of his coat. The whole band goes, what?
Yeah.
That's true. That was a long time ago, but I believe that's what happened.
Interesting. Well, and that kind of, and talking about a long time, of course, Magic Magazine has been around now for 25 years?
No, it feels like a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
No, actually, we've just completed our 21st year, mm-hmm. and September started us on 22nd, so we've just done the fifth issue in our 22nd year, or as we count them here, that's 257.
So you count them by the issue and not by the years?
All the databases and everything are set up for an issue number.
Right. Now, you started putting this digitally onto an iPad, and so that's available for iPads and also the iPad Mini and everything then right now. And you started doing that, about a year or two ago?
We started in January. The first issue was January 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done 24 issues for the iPad. And I believe, I might be talking slightly out of school here, but I know our app on the Kindle Fire, so that would be what, Amazon?
Yeah.
I can't keep all these devices. We have all these devices downstairs, and I don't even know what they are. But our app on Amazon is now up, and I believe our first issue, December, is there. We did make a big announcement on it because we're still feeling our way on the Kindle. So anyway, yes, so we're starting Kindles now, and we've been on the iPad for 24 issues.
And how has that evolved? I mean, have you obviously had a lot of changes since the first few issues and added more content?
What we really try to do is keep the digital copy exactly like the print copy. So everybody gets everything. And the way that works is we relay out the entire issue. We design it specifically for the tablets. So when you see one of our versions, it's not just a picture of the printed page. And that's certainly a less expensive way of doing it. I mean, you can do that for about $300 a month. Just tell your printer to do it, and they do it. And they'll have a PDF version of your magazine up online for you. And you know what? If I was smarter, I would do that. But I'm not that smart. I've just never liked the experience of reading something that was designed for a printed page on a digital page because I have to scroll all around to read it and everything else. In the field, it's called replication because you're replicating that versus what we call tablet design where everything has been redesigned. That font, while it looks like our magazine font, it's not. The leading is different. The spacing is different. Everything has been designed for the reader experience, the best friendly experience possible, the scrolling text, the pop-up windows, the being able to have the right illustration right on the exact same page that the reference and the trick is. So when you're trying to learn a trick, there's the illustration right there. You don't have to flip pages or go back and forth or find it.
And one of the things that you did before, of course, it used to be that you could turn it either way, I guess, like on the tablet, and then recently made it so it's just like in a regular magazine format. Is that correct?
That's true. When we came on the scene, we had it both in vertical and horizontal, and I mean, we were very, very picky about the way we put this out. If you were reading the magazine vertical and you got to a page of text and you flipped it horizontal, the exact same words would be on the horizontal version as the vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And later we abandoned that. It's just crazy. It's just so much more work to do it. By the way, it costs us 10, 12, 15 times as much money to put out one of our digital editions than it does, say, our competition does. And that's why we charge for ours. It's a separate – think of it as if you bought a book and you had the hard copy sitting on your shelf but you wanted to listen to it in your car, you don't really own the car version, the Audible version. You have to buy that version because it's manufactured totally different. And so we did. We dropped the horizontal. We dropped – we surveyed our readers, and a very small percentage of them read it horizontal. That said, though, when you get to one of the embedded videos, which is one of the big advantages of the digital versions, the video is embedded in that tablet, mm-hmm. so you're sitting on a subway or in a submarine, the video is still there. You do not need an internet connection for that video in 99% of the cases.
Because it's on your hard drive, basically.
It's on the drive of the tablet device.
Yeah.
But when you can turn that horizontal and you can see it in a bigger, you know, more logical format.
Right.
So you can go horizontal there. But no, we took away the horizontal because very few people were reading it that way, and we applied those resources to put out a Kindle Fire version.
Well, it's interesting that you're not only keeping up with the technology, but trying to keep in front of it by going again with the Kindle Fire, and I assume that there will be other kinds of tablets that will be this will be available on those kinds of tablets. For an example, I believe the Microsoft has out their new tablet, I believe, where that you can attach the keyboard, you know, to the thing. I've seen the commercials, you know, for this.
Yeah.
And so will that be available, you think, in the future for those additional kinds of devices?
It'll depend on what the market share is there.
Uh-huh.
We have, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 iPad readers now. And iPad has somewhere near 55% of the market. So if it just depends on how many readers are available on that platform and how popular that platform becomes.
Sure.
Kindle Fire has about 25% of the market. So that's a big enough number for us to explore. We're going to test this. We got into a beta program a year, two and a half years ago with Adobe. And so Magic Magazine was testing the new digital publishing suites along with Wired Magazine, National Geographic, Martha Stewart's Living. And we just chuckled every day. We were in this program with these big wheels. And we're going, which one of these is not like the other? You know, but
yeah.
Nobody can really tell that. They don't know that our numbers are infant, you know.
Compared to theirs, yeah.
Comparison.
So what is in the future, then, as far as looking into your crystal ball for 13 and beyond with Magic Magazine?
Well, my crystal ball says I'm going to probably be at this desk producing 12 more issues of Magic Magazine in 2013. You know, if you're asking about where the world of publishing is going, yeah, that's a tough question. I've been to a couple conferences, and nobody there seems to know either.
Hmm.
Will it go the way of newspapers, which is, you know, crumbling quickly? Everything's moving over to the tablets and to the, you know, computers, digital. I don't know. Magazines serve a slightly different purpose than a newspaper. Newspapers just to get you the information. And the fact is, you know, I published my own newsletter for 7 years and a Magic Shop newsletter before that. Well, today that newsletter would not exist because you can get that
online
information so much quicker.
Yeah.
We have to keep reminding ourselves here that we are not in the magazine publishing business.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the magic information business. And that's why our mission statement has been adjusted. And I'm going to misquote it here, but it's provide the best content the best way. So the first part of that should always be a rock. We should always be searching for the best possible content, something we do. But the way we deliver it, well, that's going to change over time.
Sure.
You know, so do I foresee, you know, the magazines disappearing? No, not necessarily, but I don't foresee that there will be as many magazines. That in the United States we have four major magazines with Magic, Genie, MUM, and Lincoln Ring.
Right.
And I'm not sure that all four of those are going to be able to succeed. I would say that, you know, magazines are going to be okay. They're fighting the battle right now. But in 5 to 10 years' time, I don't think you'll see four of those.
Well, it all comes down, I think, to advertisers. And if more advertisers feel like that they can get more sales by going through the internet as opposed to, you know, paying for, and I'm talking about just print media in general, you know, like with newspapers and other kinds of magazines, because as you were talking about, the newspapers are starting to disappear. Certainly they've gotten smaller. I mean, you look at USA Today, how it has gotten more narrow, and other kinds of newspapers as well as magazines that have gotten thinner. I haven't really seen the content of Magic Magazine getting any smaller. I mean, you still have it perfect bound, and it's still the same size as it's been.
Right. the thing is that most of the magazines have had to make cuts in the thickness of paper, the amount of color printing you do, or the amount of pages that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, Magic Magazine came on the scene and grew very quickly and became the largest selling magazine. And I say that Linking Ring has always been a bigger magazine. They have a larger circulation.
But it's really a journal more than a magazine.
Well, you cannot buy it. You have
correct.
To become a member and get it.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Guinness Book of World Records said, we want to make you the largest selling, and we said, yeah, that's accurate. And there was a time where we hit 10,400 in 2000. And the thing is that we're not at that number anymore. No magazines are. They've all come down in size. But we were lucky enough to have the resources and the reserves in place and be able to maintain that we have never dropped our cover style. We've never dropped our paperweight. We've never dropped the amount of color. Every page is color. So we've been fortunate to do that. But the battle is not easy, and it's getting tougher as we go. And, yes, advertising, I think part of that, the big part of that was that if you were an advertiser, even if you got a big, fat mailing list prior to the Internet, you still had to print flyers, stuff them in an envelope, pay postage. You didn't have any way to get to your mailing list quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you run ads in a magazine for a year, you build yourself a big, fat mailing list, and you have a very economical way of getting to those people. So, no, advertising is slightly different now, and it serves different purposes. And I think the key to the success of the magazines in the future, print magazines anyway, is going to be the subscription base. If there are enough subscribers that want to see a print magazine, then one or two of those magazines will survive. If there isn't, they'll go by the wayside.
Right. Right. Well, I think, as you mentioned, with the MUM and the Linking Ring, both being journals of the organizations that are not available for purchase but only come with your membership, that it is something that membership has to drive the sales, if you will, or the publication of those magazines. And if advertising falls off for those magazines, I would think that they would have to get smaller. And let me ask you about the percentage. As I recall, there is a certain percentage for it to be going through the U.S. mail of content to advertising. I think, is that true?
It's partially true. All magazines, most magazines are mailed at a periodical rate.
Yeah.
And this goes all the way back to Benjamin Franklin saying that we should have a special rate for any books, newspapers, whatever information, mm-hmm. so that we create a more literate society. We want to encourage that literacy. And that's where book rate came from and periodical rate came from. And the post office says, yes, we'll mail your magazine for a very small fee, but you have to really be a literary magazine. You have to have content in here. It can't just be a sales piece. So, you know, Nordstrom can't run their catalog and say, oh, it's periodical mail because we threw in one article.
Yeah.
And, no, you can't do that. There is a percentage. But even when our heyday, when we were hitting, you know, 50-plus pages of advertising, 60 pages of advertising, we still weren't even close to the percentage that stops us from mailing periodical rate.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Well, one thing I did want to mention was I said that the Magic Magazine in print and the Magic Magazine in digital, we give the exact same content. The way we do that is through something called Magic Plus, and that's the bridge between the two. Because on the tablet, we can put in videos. As an example, the December issue of Magic has Jason England and R. Paul Wilson's road trip, and it has 6 or 7 videos attached to it, and they're in the thing where when Johnny Thompson's talking about something, you can touch his name and suddenly he's on screen telling you about it. And the perfect, when they're talking about practically a perfect Zero Shuffle they found down in New Orleans, you can tap it and see the guy do it. Well, you can't do that in your print magazine. So what we came up with was the bridge. It's called Magic Plus. And what you do is you sit down with your print copy, go to connect to the Internet, and it'll ask you what's the last word on page 32 or something, and that's your key. You type in that word, and now you're into Magic Plus. And as you're reading the Jason England and R. Paul Wilson article, when you get to that Johnny Thompson point, you just click on Johnny Thompson in Magic Plus, and you can watch the video there.
Interesting. And as I recall, that secret or word or password changes each time you get on. So it's not like if somebody can give you that, you actually have to have a physical copy of the magazine.
Right. Security is always, it's the same with conventions or anything else you do with security. You want security to keep people from stealing from you, but at the same time, you don't want your security to be such an inconvenience for people that are paying you. So what we did was we have a random set of questions, and we monitor it, and if somebody takes one of the answers and puts it on the internet, then we'll see that question's getting answered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, plus you have to sit there and go through 15 to 20 questions before you might hit yours. So what we did was we put in a security system that is easy for the person who has the magazine right in front of them, and it doesn't create an inconvenience. So,
right.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, this whole concept. The other part is that Magic Plus is up there forever. If Genie has taken a different tack. They will give you all of their back issues. Well, I don't know too many people that go and look at all of those because it's PDF versions, and they're not easy to get to where you want to go. And the other part is that with Magic Magazine's plan, if you own that print magazine, then you get Magic Plus.
Then they expire with your subscription.
Your subscription, it doesn't matter whether you picked it up on the street. You now have access to it. That is your key. And as long as you hold that magazine, you hold the key. And so we're not forcing a subscription model. We're saying if you buy a Magic Shop copy, you go into a Magic Shop. Our Magic Shops are very, very important to us. And we like supporting the Magic Shop. So versus them trying to pull the customer away from the Magic Shop, we're encouraging the person to buy at the Magic Shop.
Yeah.
And you still get all the bonuses with us.
Gotcha. Well, listen, I thank you very much for your time, and we just got a ton of people that we're talking to here today. So I want to, again, wish you and the family a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year of the Magic Magazine and into the future.
Well, thank you, Scott, and same to you.
I know next year another exciting thing, of course. I wish we had more time to talk about Magic Live, but people should start to, I guess.
Magic Live. I'll just tell you this briefly. We pulled the numbers the other day, and I was shocked because we're not making a big deal about it right at the moment. We hit big numbers, 1,200, 1,300 people last year, and we're running something like 7% ahead. So if anybody listens to this, get on the wagon quickly, please.
And then go to magicmagazine.com.
They sure do.
Very good. Thanks again, Stan. Appreciate your time.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
I'd like to welcome my next guest over here, Cosmo. Hey, Cos, how are you doing?
How are you doing, Scott?
Doing very good. I didn't say exactly what you are. You know, a lot of what I've been introducing some other guests, it's kind of hard to quantify you. I can't really put you into a box and say that you are this, you know, publisher or, you know, this guy or that, because you do a little bit of everything over there, man. You also have, not only, of course, known as a street magician, but then you are the creator of Real Magic, the digital DVD magazine.
I am.
So is that really the right title? I guess the producer or?
Real Magic Magazine. I'm the executive producer, I guess, is what the real title would be.
Yeah. And that's been out now for 3 years, 4 years? How long was it?
Six.
Boy, time flies. And now it's out every other month.
Yeah.
For a while it was quarterly.
Yeah, it was the first year. The first four issues were quarterly. Then we moved to six times a year.
Yeah.
They said we wouldn't last.
Yeah. But it has been doing just fantastic. I think it's one of the best bargains out there, and it's quite interesting, you know. Now, why did you decide to go with a digital version as opposed to another magazine?
Oh, well, I can't write. I can't read. Actually, before I became a full-time street performer, street magician, I was a broadcast engineer at Cornell University.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a background in video. And the magazine happened because somebody thought it would be a good idea. Tim Tronel came to me and asked me if I would be interested in producing something like that. And he said that Murphy's would support it if I did it. I think he probably asked about 12 other guys. I was the only one stupid enough to do it. So it's a challenge every issue, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
It's a demanding thing. I'm looking at a check disc of the newest issue, issue 31. I don't know when people are going to see this, issue 31. David Copperfield is on the cover of the magazine. We got a hour interview with Copperfield. So we've been really, really fortunate. We've got, our first issue was with Paul Harris, and then the next issue we had Jason Alexander, who was George from Seinfeld.
Yeah,
people don't realize he's a magician. And he was really, really, really smart.
Mm-hmm.
We John Lovick interviewed him, and he talked about, you know, creating character for magicians. And interesting, he talked for over 2 hours. Everything he said was golden, you know, and, you know, he created one of the most, memorable characters in television history. And, we were lucky to get Paul Harris and Ben Ham, in the magazine.
Issue after issue, it seems like that you always have just some stellar lineup of not just people that you're talking and interviewing, but then other lessons and things. And so it's a good way, you know, of course, with video right now, a lot of people are on YouTube and they're teaching this or that, or people buy a one-trick video. This has just a lot of stuff in which they are giving you, some, like John Armstrong giving tips, or people talking about coins or mentalism, whatever it happens to be. I mean, it's quite a variety.
Well, great, great magicians. You know, we had David Roth, we had Banachek doing a column, Garrett Thomas, who I think is one of the top five close-up magicians in the world.
Yeah.
Currently, I mean, this guy is off the hook brilliant, you know, and great magic he creates. And so we've had John Armstrong, who was a close-up magician here at the Magic Castle. We've had great people, you know, Kainoa Harbottle's with us now, and this issue we're working on, our new columnist is Doc Easton, talking about working behind a bar. So we try to keep it fresh and always new, and find new things to put in, and you know, we're proud of it. We think it's a good deal. We think it's the best deal in magic.
One of the things that it seems to be an issue with digital things, and that has to do like with e-books, or whether you are you're putting out music on MP3s or whatever. Of course, with Napster a long time ago, and people used to download music and pirate it, I guess, if you will, that we are seeing a lot of that then now. I know people put out DVDs, and almost immediately after they come out, that it's available on some sort of site that's been ripped off. I'm sure that you have experienced that.
Yeah, you know, I people call it pirating. I that's almost a romantic term, isn't it? Pirates. I just prefer to call it stealing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's just put it where it is.
Yeah, say what
exactly
it is.
Exactly, yeah. What it is. This is what it is. It's no different than this. You and I are sitting in the parking lot of Walmart. And I say to you, hey, Scott, go inside and steal the newest Johnny Depp movie, Pirates of the Caribbean. Would you go and steal it for me? And you'd probably say, no.
No.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'm not a thief. Well, if you are downloading from torrent sites, if you are making copies and giving it to your friends, you're a thief. There is no difference between walking into the store, taking something off the shelf, and walking out. The only difference is it's way less likely that you're going to get caught, pirating.
Taking something, stealing it off the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're hiding behind your IP address, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's an awful thing, you know, and the thing about it is that, you know, a guy who creates this stuff, you know, these creators, the magicians who create these great effects, you know, Eric Jones and all those guys, they're not rich.
Right.
They can't afford for you just to take their work. They're guys who love magic and worked hard to get where they were, and because you feel that you're entitled, because people feel they're entitled to it, they just take it.
Well, they
I can't afford it, so I just take it.
Yeah, and they get discouraged, of course, and that is the creators, after a while, putting out so much stuff. It's like, well, people are stealing my babies. I mean, and so they stop inventing things. I mean, when's the last time you saw something that John Cornelius has put out? I mean, there was a guy who's brilliant, had just so many great creative ideas he was putting out. And another guy, I can't think of that, who had the floating Mercury thing, Steve Dushak. I haven't seen the stuff that Dushak had put out in a long time. A lot of guys, you know, who were just are creative, but decide, well, I'm not going to do anything for magic anymore because people are just stealing it.
A lot of guys don't know who John Cornelius is anymore. I had a conversation with just a couple of years ago. It was amazing. And he would be the example that I would bring up. This guy, one of the most creative minds in magic today. So, same thing with Dushak.
Mm-hmm.
And he just told me, I'm never putting anything out again because they're just going to steal it. Why should I put it out if they're just going to take it?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. You know, if you look at real magic, now I'm a producer. I've created some things in my life, and I still have them. I haven't put them out, but I will soon. But I've created some stuff, and I'm not excited about putting. I produce all these products, and you know, with Justin Miller, for instance, Justin Miller, we put out the Cloak DVD. That thing was downloaded the day after we put it out from torrent sites 30,000 times in one day.
30,000 times. That's just unbelievable.
Just we have
wow.
I'm not lying to you. Millions of downloads of Cosmo Magic products.
Mm-hmm.
I had 10 cents for every product that's been downloaded of mine that I produced.
Uh-huh.
A millionaire.
Wow. Just 10 cents, yeah.
My wife and I, we live a humble life, you know.
Yeah.
A simple life.
So I understand that you have some sort of a method or something you're going to be doing with streaming in the future. You're going to stop sending out the DVDs and you can now buy this online, Real Magic, or what's the future?
No, that's not it at all. No.
Not at all? Okay. Back up.
Yeah, back up. Well, we're going to make Real Magic available via streaming and done well. And I'll talk about that in a second. I think that people who create and produce products like myself, and I think we have to look at what's the best thing. Keep in mind, you know, stay focused on what is the best thing for the customer who supports us. I think that you don't want to ignore the fact that people are just blatantly stealing from you. But we have to get past it. There's likely not a lot that anybody can do about it. You know, I mean, if the major motion picture studios can't do anything about this piracy thing, this blatant theft, then I'm some guy like Cosmo. I'm live in a small town. I'm certainly not going to be able to do anything about it. So what we do is we try to produce really, really great products, and hopefully people support them. And I think Real Magic is a great product. One of the things we're doing with Real Magic, and I don't want to sound like a commercial because I don't think that's your intent, but we're going to have a passworded section of the RealMagicMagazine.com where you go there and you become a member, and we're going to have all kinds of free stuff there, partial pieces of people's lecture notes and PDF files and past columns, maybe from Magic and Genie and Magic Scene Magazine, and tricks and moves and all kinds of stuff that you can go there and just get it for free as a gift, as you know, as a thing, you know, as just something for magicians to drive them to our webpage. And then also have Real Magic available via streaming and not the disc. Now, we're going to continue to do the disc. It's a one or the other thing. Either you can get the disc or you can get the streaming. Streaming is less money. And you know, so you can go there and buy all the back issues. We're testing and it works really, really well. It's security. It's reasonably secure. We can tell how many people are watching a particular specific IP address, and you know, so we can turn people on and turn them off. It's amazing, though. You know, I talked to Kaufman about this, Richard Kaufman, and he says he's got a similar kind of thing that he does. Mm-hmm. And he has to turn people off sometimes because they're giving out their passwords and all that information. And he turns people off and he says it wouldn't believe who it is. There's a lot of big names in the industry. You know, it's not just kids who are doing this.
Yeah.
It's guys like us that are doing this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you can turn on your computer, you can figure out how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even a little bit computer literate, you can figure out how to steal everybody's stuff. You know, it's a shame. I'm very disappointed in a lot of the magicians out there. I get a message on Magic Cafe, and he goes, Cosmo, I'm sorry. I downloaded Tales from the Streets, my 2 DVD set on my work on the streets. He says it was great, and I just want to pay you for it because I feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him a message back, and I says, so that means you're going to pay all my friends you stole from too? I never heard from him again.
Interesting. You know, Banachek was telling me when he was lecturing overseas one time that there was one foreign country, he didn't sell as many DVDs as he was in some of the other countries. And as he was going through these cities in this particular country, he asked somebody, like about the third, you know, how, you know, are you guys not interested in the DVDs? And they said, oh, we've already got that. We downloaded it. Said, what? Well, apparently that someone had made this available and given a link before his lecture, and he arrived in these cities, so they were able to go in and get the torrent download for free, you know, of the DVD that someone had burned and sent to these guys. Like, hey, you know, he's coming this way. This is what you're going to be expecting to see. And so he wasn't able to sell anything. It was crazy. So... And there were big names, too. I mean, that's why I'm not telling you the country or the name of the person, you know, but it was kind of amazing.
Bob Sheets said it to me best one time, and he said, someday these guys are going to want to get paid for their work, too. Hmm. And it's not going to be there, you know. I think it would be great if everybody just stopped producing and nobody put out anything, you know.
Could happen. Well, hopefully that's not going to be the future. You're not going to be discouraged and shut down Real Magic anytime soon, are you?
No. I'm having a blast doing this. It's fun, and I'm getting old, so I don't work as much as I used. So it gives me something to do. And
for those people who are looking to buy Real Magic or to find out more information, by the way, I should point out for those who are listening who are not familiar with Real Magic, that's R-E-E-L, like movie reel, not R-E-A-L, so R-E-E-L Magic, .com, is that correct?
Magic Magazine.
Real Magic Magazine .com. Got it. Good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the talk. And before I real quickly, so I can kind of wrap up and mention that you are best known as a street magician. You say you're not on the street as much as you were before. That street magic is like the first type of magic that goes back in history, I guess. But what do you think the future is?
For magic?
No, or street magic in particular.
I think we're going to continue to do it. I know there's a lot of really good young guys out there who are doing it, and I mean they just carry on. You know, the good greats they get old and they stop or they die. You know, and the new guys come in and do it. It's fun to watch them work. I think there's some really creative guys out. I got to say this. You know, people look, a lot of magicians look down on street magicians. They think that I was called a beggar by one. Name in magic, you know, and recently, and I can tell you this, one of the most difficult places to work. Cellini used to say, I was a Cellini student, used to say it all the time, is if you spend 1 year on the streets, it's like working 10 years any place else. You're just going to get that much better, that fast, much faster, because it's such a difficult environment to work in.
You get immediate feedback, too.
You do. And my dogs are barking. You do it. If they walk away and they don't give you any money, you just got your feedback, so.
Right. Well, yeah. You know, let me ask about street magic briefly then as well, because as street magic, as, you know, they talk about street magicians and, you know, some of the online websites are selling street magic type of stuff, you know, it's different than what you and I are talking about, actually performing street magic.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, David Blaine's street magic is walk around, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Up, where a real street guy like a busker, like what I do, was building big audiences, doing a real show, a beginning, middle, and end, and at the end of all of that, passing your hat and collecting money, and that's how you pay your way through your life. You know, Gazzo, myself, there's, you know, five or six guys in the world that do it at a pretty high level, and that's the difference. It's a big difference.
Yeah, because as you say, the other ones are just kind of. Walk-arounders, it's not really street magic, but but they seem to have taken that name or that moniker of street magic and applied it towards kind of young, hip, close-up tricks, Sterling kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Blaine did it. You know, Blaine did that. And, good on him. I mean, I think Blaine has more impact on modern close-up magic than anybody in history. So, But there certainly is a difference between what I do and what those guys are doing. Yeah, I'm definitely not hip, and I'm definitely not cool.
But you and I are definitely getting older. Well, I wish you a very Merry Christmas for you and the family, and also a prosperous New Year for Real Magic and everything going into next year.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Everybody out there, I hope you guys have a great holiday. I appreciate the time I got to spend with you guys today.
They appreciate it, and I, on their behalf, I tell you thanks again. See you, Cos.